This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Zimbabwe's biggest conservation group Friday called for full transparency on the government's sale of 35 elephants to China in December. The government, which has been scrambling for cash over the past year, initially denied reports of the sale.
That's Sebastian Mumfu reporting from Harare. Details coming up.
Also, the Gambia Supreme Court is expected to be presented with a petition Monday by the ruling party challenging the results of the presidential election. And a lot fewer migrants and refugees arrived in Europe last year compared to 2015.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, witnesses say gunfire erupted early this morning in the central Ivory Coast city of Bouake. VOA's French to Africa service reports that soldiers looted weapons from local police stations and took control of the northern and southern entrances to the city. Bouake is an important trade route for goods coming from Mali and Burkina Faso. Journalist Naruta Namaste in Abidjan tells VOA that similar mutinies broke out in the towns of Korhogo and Daloa. The soldiers made no immediate demands, but are believed to be seeking higher pay. The soldiers are former rebels who were integrated into Ivory Coast Army after the country's civil war. They complained that some of the promises made in 2007 peace deal were never implemented.
The Gambia Supreme Court is scheduled to be back in session on Monday. At that time, it's expected to receive a petition from the ruling party challenging the results of the presidential election. The Electoral Commission declared opposition challenger Adama Barrow the winner in the December 1st poll, defeating Yahya Jammeh, who's been in power for 22 years. However, after initially conceding defeat, Jammeh challenged the results, citing voting irregularities. He wants the presidential election declared null and void. Barrow is due to be sworn in as the new president of the Gambia on January 19th. However, it's not clear whether Jammeh will step down. This week, the head of the Electoral Commission fled to Senegal after reportedly receiving death threats.
Malawi has been anxious to demonstrate zero tolerance for corruption and financial mismanagement after the massive Cashgate scandal in 2014 that caused foreign countries to cut aid. This week, Malawi's president set up a commission to investigate a fresh scandal called Mazegate, a deal involving the recent purchase of the staple crop from neighboring Zambia. It has sparked controversy on both sides of the border. Lamek Messina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
It all started in November when a local newspaper in Malawi published leaked documents that suggested possible irregularities during a government purchase of 100,000 tons of maize from Zambia. Malawi has been importing maize to avert food shortages after flooding and drought wrecked last year's harvest. The media leak prompted a group of 18 civil society organizations called the National Advocacy Platform to push for greater transparency in maize procurement process. Bire Mayaya is a rights activist.
There are suspicions that some steps were not followed, and it will only be a broad-based commission of inquiry which will determine the extent of guilt or culpability. Right now, we are demanding that the process be initiated so that the truth comes out.
The leaked documents indicate Malawi's state-owned grain trader, the Agriculture Development and Marketing Corporation, or ADMAC, bought a large consignment of maize for $34.5 million from a private Zambian trader. The records allege that ADMAC could have instead purchased the maize directly from Zambian government for $21.5 million. ADMAG and Malawi government spokesman Nicholas Dawusi dispute that version of events. Dawusi tells VOA the issue has been blown out of proportion.
NERS was not bought from a private trader. It was bought from Zambia Cooperative Federation, a subsidiary parastate of the Zambian government. And in any case, the Zambia Cooperative Federation has confirmed that, so I can only say what I've said.
ADMAG officials obtained a court injunction restraining the Daily Times, the local newspaper which published the leaked document, from further reporting on the maize imports from Zambia. Malawian civil rights group, the National Advocacy Platform, wrote an open letter to President Peter Mutharika asking him to suspend Agriculture Minister George Chabonda, who is accused of direct involvement in the maize purchase, something prohibited by law. In a press statement Wednesday, Chabonda said his only involvement was in early December when he went to meet the president of Zambia to discuss the status of the deal after Zambia announced that it had banned maize exports. Chabonda told local radio station Zodiac Broadcasting Service he will weather the storm.
When I was Minister of Foreign Affairs, they were saying I should resign because I'm traveling too much. When I've come Minister of Agriculture, I should resign because I went to Mexico. Now there is Zambia. They will keep on talking. But for me, I'll never resign.
The Commission of Inquiry is expected to submit its findings to the President at the end of the month, but it may not end there. In Zambia, leaders of the opposition, United Progressive Party, say they have evidence of corruption in maize exports. The party said in a press statement that it presented that evidence to Zambia's Anti-Corruption Commission Thursday for action. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Zimbabwe's biggest conservation group today called for full transparency on the government's sale of 35 elephants to China in December. The government has been scrambling for cash over the past year and initially denied reports of the sale. Sebastian Mumfu files from Harare.
Late Thursday, President Robert Mugabe's government confirmed that it exported 35 elephants last month, despite having earlier dismissed the reports by the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. On Friday, Johnny Rodriguez, who heads the conservation group, said the secrecy raises concerns of corruption and inhumane treatment of the animals during their transfer to China.
There's nothing being transparent about it because you can see in Zimbabwe where the corruption and the greed is so deep. These animals belong to Africa. You know, if you're going to export them, you export to the neighboring countries where the system is conducive and it's suitable for these animals.
Rodriguez says he doubts the money will be used for the benefit of animals, as the government claims.
They keep claiming that the money goes into conservation. I can't see it. The Chinese donated 4 million of that was to contain the poaching. It's not happening. But there's certain people that have got fingers on the pie and making a lot of money on the expense of the wildlife.
Last year, Zimbabwe's government said it would sell wildlife and use the proceeds to feed wild animals that were feeling the effects of a drought brought on by the weather condition known as El Nino. Zimbabwe has an elephant population of over 83,000, the second highest in Africa. But the number is dropping as poachers kill the giant beast for their ivory tusks, which remain in high demand in Asia. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A lot fewer migrants and refugees arrived in Europe last year compared to 2015. The main reason for the decline was the agreement reached between the European Union and Turkey. It called on Turkey to prevent Syrian, Iraqi, and Afghan refugees from taking the short boat trip to Greece. Frontex, the European Border Control Agency, says tighter controls in the Balkans also contributed to the drop in migrant and refugee flows from the eastern Mediterranean. There were more than 182,000 migrants recorded on the Greek islands and the mainland last year, down 79% from 2015. However, Frontex says migrant flows to Italy reached record levels in 2016. More than 180,000 people crossed the central Mediterranean from North Africa, mainly Libya. Most hired smugglers to make the crossing. Frontex says Italy has seen a tenfold increase in West African migrants since 2010. Nigerians made up the largest group, followed by those from Eritrea, Guinea, Ivory Coast, and the Gambia. In all, 364,000 migrants and refugees used the two sea routes to reach Europe last year, down two-thirds from 2015. About 5,000 people died trying to reach Europe. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Gambia Supreme Court is expected to be presented with a petition by the ruling party on Monday challenging the results of the presidential election. And a lot fewer migrants and refugees arrived in Europe last year compared to 2015. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The Algerian government is starting to see some protest over the high cost of living and a tax increase. Last Monday, a peaceful demonstration turned violent in the Mediterranean port city of Bejaia. News reports say police used rubber bullets and arrested some protesters. There are concerns the riots could spread to Tizi Ouzou in north-central Algeria. It was the scene of the 1980 Berber Spring Movement, which demanded the recognition of Berber identity in Algeria. Mohamed Turkawi is a professor of conflict resolution at George Mason University. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the deep roots of social unrest in Algeria.
This is, I think, a large-scale outcry against the cost of living in a leading oil-exporting country in North Africa. This is a wealthy government that cannot provide basic human needs, cannot at least control the cost of living for those poor young Algerians. So the riots have become chronic occurrences of violent clashes between protesters who are mostly young, under the age of 25, who are seeking opportunities, and the government forces over some controversial law of the new budget, of 2017 budget, which is going to impose tax hikes and more austerity measures. I think what has happened in the last couple of days is another reminder that maybe Algeria is going back to another replica of the riots of 2011, described as bread and sugar riots, which were linked then to rising food prices, housing shortages, and wider social and political grievances. So basically, in short, this is unsettled social conflict over basic human needs of young Algerians.
How could the Algerian government calm the situation?
Well, unfortunately, the government so far has adopted a rather misguided approach in its pursuit of containing the riots and remained stuck at the level of conflict management with no real indicators of resolving or at least mitigating this conflict. Or one major factor that has contributed to the escalation of this conflict is the style of the Algerian Minister of Interior, Nordine Bedawi, who threatened to strike with an iron fist whoever tries to destabilize the country's security. And we have heard about some conspiracy theories, and there are external factors. And also in a typical hyper move of realpolitik. So unfortunately, more than 100 youngsters have been detained, and nobody is talking about why the government keeps coming back to the same legal framework of penalizing those people who are basically articulating their malaise and the resentment of status quo. For example, the city of Bijaya seems to be paralyzed today, and it's not just the rioters, but also the private sector. Those small businesses had to shut their doors. They are afraid of this riot move. So I have not seen a well-informed approach in dealing with these social uprisings.
Would that encourage more Algerian citizens to join the strike and take to the streets?
It seems to be an open-ended conflict, because if you don't tackle the deep-rooted causes, then what's going to happen? That you deal with the symptoms today, after a month or two, then you have another wave of violence. So there is dire need for real reforms, more money to be spent in infrastructure and unemployment and things like that. Otherwise, we are going to generate the same resentment, and then they will be translated into more collective action and contentious politics. And it seems that Algeria is developing a deeper disarticulation between society and state.
Mohamed Cherkawi is professor of conflict resolution at George Mason University. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed Elshinawi.
Indigenous groups in Namibia are suing Germany for committing genocide against their people more than 100 years ago. While Germany has acknowledged the genocide in the early 1900s, it has not agreed to reparations to descendants of the Avahirora and Nama peoples. Germany has said any compensation would go to the government of Namibia. Berlin has already given hundreds of millions of dollars in development aid since Namibia's independence from South Africa. Namibia and Germany are currently in talks over Germany's colonial settlement of what was then called Southwest Africa. But the talks exclude the indigenous groups who were killed by German imperial troops during a rebellion in the late 1800s. The suit also alleges lands were taken without compensation and that indigenous people were put into forced labor camps. The suit was filed yesterday in New York based on a 1789 U.S. human rights law.
Despite advances in fighting malaria, the death toll among children, particularly in Africa, remains very high. That's according to a public health expert who is calling on the global community to do more to understand and treat the illness. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
An estimated 212 million people are infected with malaria every year, according to the most recent statistics from the World Health Organization, and 429,000, mostly children in sub-Saharan Africa, die of the disease, which is transmitted by mosquitoes. The parasite that causes malaria, P. falciparum, is front and center of a next-generation vaccine that has the potential to prevent the disease and halt transmission. Researchers at the Center for Infectious Disease Research at the University of Washington in Seattle, in conjunction with the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center, have developed a vaccine that uses the entire parasite to stimulate a protective immune response. Stefan Kappa is director of translational research at the center. He says researchers weakened the live parasite by knocking out three genes that promote infection after the parasite enters the liver. Kappa calls that first stage of the disease the gateway of malaria infection.
These three genes make sure that the parasite cannot develop to the next stage of infection, which occurs in the blood, which causes all the disease and death associated with malaria.
Normally, after the parasite infects the liver, it leaves the organ to infect red blood cells, where billions of disease-causing parasites are produced. In a study reported in the journal Science Translational Medicine, researchers describe identifying the three genes tucked within the parasite's enormous genome that allow falciparum to enter the bloodstream. By knocking them out, the altered parasite remained confined to the liver, according to Kappa, and the immune system began churning out protective antibodies.
So it infects the liver, that's asymptomatic, so that's okay, and it doesn't cause any specific damage to the liver, but it stimulates your immune system. So it stops right there, and we call it check-in, but doesn't check out.
In a phase one clinical trial testing the vaccine's safety, the neutralized parasite was injected into 10 healthy volunteers, showing that it stimulated a strong immune response without making the participants sick. Investigators then injected mice with the genetically engineered parasites and exposed them to parasites that had not been altered. The vaccine containing the parasite minus the three genes completely protected the animals from malaria, and Kappa says it has the potential to prevent person-to-person transmission.
If you block the parasite in the liver, you do not get disease, but you also don't get transmission of the parasite to the next person because the mosquito has to pick up parasites from the bloodstream. But if the parasite can never make it to the bloodstream, it cannot be transmitted to another person.
Researchers are preparing to test the experimental vaccine in humans later this year to see whether they, too, are protected against malaria when exposed to the parasite. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Peter Hunsley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Music lovers, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, tune in for a full hour of Africa's best music. Chatty and electro dance music? Check. Classic Monde Grio music? Check. Interview with founder of Ghanaian Hip Life, Reggie Rockstone? Check. Everybody. There's this and so much more music for everyone in this show. So don't miss it. This Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC. On Music Time in Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. And on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a discussion on the challenges of political transitions in Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Gambia, to name a few. Right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.